do that. I will add, under this particular section here, we do have Alaska DNR STI. We have 20,000 penciled in there, because we're anticipating, once we get that finally solved, that we are going to have some fees associated. We don't know what they're going to be yet. But as far as the other ones, my experience is FERC just sends you the bill and you have to pay it. You don't have any negotiating effort there. In fact, sometimes you have a hard time getting bills out of them. Sometimes you used to get bills for two years instead of a single year, because their billing wasn't very timely. I don't think we have any opportunity to change the FERC stuff.
Those have actually gone down significantly a few years ago.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ken.
Page 14.
Yeah, I think we're at 14 now. Dams, reservoirs, and waterways. And I think that's one I already mentioned, that the big one was the ROV inspections, and that we've obviously completed that. We still have some near shore stuff to do, but that's out of the main budget. And electric plant wages and benefits. Essentially, this is what the what was approved in the labor contract, and that includes a 2% raise effective July 2020. For code 545 on page 16, non-production plant maintenance, pretty much status quo here. Pretty good description of the individual items on there. Not a lot to add to that. We do typically have two barges a year, one in the spring, one in the fall, roughly, for resupplying both of the remote locations, and some off-site warehousing costs and a few things like that. Some testing, water testing, and just general things there. For code 561, page 17, SCADA maintenance support and GE licensing support. I will note that there's quite a big difference year over year here, and that's because we've been able to reduce our GE licensing support and kind of narrow down what we really believe is useful and valuable, and so there's a very significant savings there. For code 562, substation expense. I just got a note there that we have some transformer testing to take place in FY20. Got a few items in there. We have some tap changer maintenance that we anticipate having to do, but comes in under FY19 budget. For code 564, transmission submarine cable expense, and this is where I just mentioned here a second ago that we've got some near shore inspections. It's a little bit different area here of the budget, and that's one of our larger ticket items. And we also have some marine terminal switch maintenance that we had some call it engagement contact issues out in for the switches out at the marine terminals, and we just need to go through all of them. They're in a pretty harsh environment out there, and they need to get adjusted and cleaned occasionally.
Does that require an Audi?
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
It occurred during the
scheduled annual maintenance outage.
Correct.
And this is another one, obviously, it's a big disparity from FY19 budget was almost $550,000, and this year it's $120,000, roughly. Mm-hmm. So, and that was the other ROV inspection. Overhead line maintenance. We talked about this under new business item, and pretty straightforward. We try to break out most of this stuff and track it independently. And we do have a little bit of money in there for critical unforeseen events. When I first got here, we used to carry quite a lot of contingency, and over the years, we've peeled that out of the budget. So we have a little bit in there, so if something happens, we can go right to work and get the job done. We don't have to call a special meeting because we have funding in the budget for it. Obviously, if it's something big, then we would convene a special meeting. Any questions? Work 920. Admin wages. There's no wage increases over what was approved by the board back in June for staff. And then there's a contractual CEO adjustment in there. So relatively, I mean, there's some discrepancy between the FY19 budget and this one because that doesn't show up. For code 921, office expense. So we have a few items in here of note. I'm going to add AEDs in our office locations, automatic external defibrillators. And I think that's an important safety device to have at our sites. And potentially then you could also grab one if you're headed out into the field. In our industry, you should have one in a vehicle if you're around power lines. Some vehicle timers. We need to do some website development. We're going to freshen up our website. We haven't done anything with it. That was one of the first things I did when I got here, and we're ready for a refresh. And it also coincides with our current website support company is backing out. So we've hired somebody local to take that role. So we'll freshen it up, get a little bit more dynamic, and I think it's good to do that every periodically over time. And another thing I will note as well, we also have an increase in IT costs. As you may recall, we're in the process of transitioning to a new IT provider that we obviously presented to the board previously. And so you're seeing some increase here. Some of that has to do with one of the features of the new provider is improving our cybersecurity and kind of restructuring that so we have better protections, which of course that's like one of the number one discussions in all boardrooms these days is cybersecurity. For code 923, professional services. So I will note these are pretty straightforward. We didn't break that out in FY19. Okay, I'm lying, but I don't. Sorry, I apologize. I didn't catch that the FY19. Yeah, that's all right. We did reduce professional services in the area of legal just a little bit. Haven't been spending quite as much on legal and or legal in DC related matters. We still obviously have a legislative lobbyist that we're funding. I've also put a line in here for the 4-hour plan engineering review of major equipment. I'll say this is a very rough number. I'm anticipating having to hire a couple of different experts, field experts in particular devices to try to do some more detailed lifetime assessments on particular high value equipment that may impact our long-term capital project planning. So, and just as a review, the 4-hour plan, that we'll have to have that wrapped up in the year after next. So the more work we can get done in this next fiscal year, we'll be better prepared to wrap that report up timely in 2021. Another item that we have under this one is we have a hydrology study for Swan Lake. And it's kind of a generic term. We've used it on some other types of studies. And I'll let Robert speak to this just briefly, kind of let the board know what we're thinking here and why we're doing it. And maybe if you want to just add some detail there, Robert.
Sure. So
So when I first got here, we did the Swan Lake raise, and it added capacity, which we've seen the fruits of that labor in 2017, 6.5 feet, $1 million, or we've already reported on that. But there's the other end of the spectrum is you're raising the dam. The other thought process is how far can you draft it? I was reading the original R.W. Beck documents, and the actual initial draft, maximum draft, was at 267.5. Right now it's at 271.5. So the question was, well, how far is actual, what's the capability of the plant? So Ed contacted our board of consultants, Brewer, and he mentioned going down below that 271.5 is very easy at a reduced operating capacity, so one unit instead of two. So each plant is designed to run down to their draft limit, the FERC limits, at full capacity, both units operating 100%. So at reduced capacities, the question is, can we lower the FERC draft limit? Can we utilize more of that water? And as Trey's mentioned earlier, we are going through these highly volatile years of maybe next year we'll get a full lake, and the year after we'll have no water. So we'll have to use the water year to year, and drafting is one of those big deals. So this is just a study to see how far can we go reasonably, at what operating constraint from the units, and whether or not we can get a FERC modification.
Thank you.
And I'll add on to that. Thanks, Robert. Our initial touch point with FERC, they've indicated that they might be willing to talk about lowering that with some background information prior to a relicensing effort. So if they end up, if we do the engineering study and all the information supports potentially drafting deeper, and maybe there's some criteria that you can only do it on one unit, but you could use that water. You know, maybe that shifts the draft limit down, and so you're actually using the lower parts of the lake for your reserve, for, I'll call it, your cushion for your diesel. That could potentially add quite a bit more energy to the system, and potentially delay the need to build a new asset. So I think it's important to look at, and we should at least be able to answer the question with good data and science behind it. And so I think it's worth looking at. So we do have some money in there for that. Another item that I also have put in here is an engineering estimate for reclamation of the projects. You've heard us talk about it forever, before I was even here. It had to do with the reclamation fund that we have jointly with Kodiak and Copper Valley Electric, or the original four hydro projects. And you know, we've been working slowly to try to separate ourselves and get a clean break from that. One of those options that potentially peels out of that is that we would perhaps be required to go get a bond in lieu of continued payments into the reclamation fund. Part of that effort is DNR has requested before and chewed around the edges a bit on having an engineer's estimate for the cost of reclamation. Otherwise, you can't value the bond, right? There's not a very good description on what that means, right? So they leave it up to the owner to define that in many ways, and which is okay. That's to our advantage in some ways. So what it requires is getting a professional engineer out there to give some sort of an estimate. What's it going to cost to like remove the dam and the major infrastructure out there, and then put some numbers to that. So that's what that particular line item is, and that'll give us some required information to kind of move forward on that issue.
Mr. Chairman, this is Lisa.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Yeah, Trey, does this sort of help satisfy that new ruling, GASB 86, that Joy was talking about earlier?
It's somewhat tied at the hip, but so on that particular GASB issue, I did write a letter to our auditors at their request that essentially took the position that we view our hydro assets as forever assets, and we have no intention to demob, remove the projects. And so right now we have a pass on that, but it is kind of linked to the same issue. And as I noted in my letter, there's really there's not a hard and fast way for valuing reclamation, so to speak. So.
Oh, okay, thanks.
Sure. So those are quite a few things embedded in this one particular FERC code, but I think they were important to talk about because they kind of, from a strategic and perspective of the agencies, so there's some key drivers in here for some of the things that we're doing. Moving on to 924, insurance. We talked pretty much in depth on that. I'll say it's relatively flat year over year. You weave back in some continuity credits, essentially things you get for being with our program for a certain amount of years. You get some kickbacks over, some refunds, if you will, at the end of the year for if losses aren't too big. So not a lot more to add to that. That takes us to 928. Regulatory Commission fees and expenses, and this is slightly lower than previous fiscal year because we have a few reports that we've been able to complete and haven't, they're kind of like, I'll view them as one-time expenses, but they might have an interval of 3 to 5 years or something like that. So you see a reduction in that because we've already completed those reports or in the process of finalizing them in this year. 930, general expense. This one's fairly detailed. We have association dues. We're involved with several entities. One of the larger ones is the National Hydropower Association. And although that's a fairly large contribution to be part of that organization, I will say that we don't have a full-time DC lobbyist. And NHA has actually done a really good job. I sit on a couple of their committees, on their legislative committee, and help drive some of the policy and procedure or policies and positions for the organization, and am able to help steer the conversation sometimes on things that affect the agency. But we've been a member for many years of that association, and. We also have professional development items in here, and I try to get every staff member engaged in some type of professional development throughout the year, sometimes twice. It might be a conference and then maybe some technical training or something to that degree. Gives them a chance to get out and work with their peers, see what best practices are going on around the industry, and I think over time that's been good for the agency. I think that's allowed us to keep up with best practices and perhaps even identify some issues that other folks are having and avoid an outage or something because we're looking in the right places for failure mode analysis. So, FERC 931, that one's pretty straightforward. Just office space in our current apartment in Ketchikan, which we use that apartment fairly regularly. We use it not only for transitioning potentially new employees. We're also using it more now with the relief operator as that person's moving from Tyee to Swan Lake and such. And then obviously Clay uses it as well when he comes down to the office for a week or two a month. So I think that's money well spent.
Question. Yes, go ahead. Three,
in the planning for the new location, is there going to be temporary quarters there for traveling staff and such on site?
So in the current concept drawing, we do have two. One bedroom, essentially kind of like studio apartments built into that footprint. We'll see if that pencils out. Kind of the next phase of that is we've been working with our architect to kind of get some idea of what we want to do, get all the elements into the building, and then at some point, well, then we'll have to do a cost-benefit analysis and say, well, does it really make sense to put that housing there, or is it just cheaper to keep doing an apartment, or do you get rid of the apartment and not do it in the office building and then just pay for a hotel? So there's some numbers I have to get into a lot deeper to get to that, to the answer to that question. But right now, yes, we are proposing. That's where we're at right now. Thanks for the question. So, Mr. Chair, that takes us to the end of that part of the budget. And that, is there any question where we're at this point?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go right ahead.
Trey, do we have a separate budget line in there for our Run of River project on the White River for doing our evaluations and permitting and so on? I know we're underway.
So that's currently covered under the grant.
Okay.
And that's a process under our overall hydrosite investigation of all the sites. We identified White River as a potential site, and we've got some reasonably good data from adjacent drainages, but we have to extrapolate that into that drainage. So now we're going to go get some real data. And for the board's benefit, we did deploy the stream gauge. We got it permitted and deployed last week. So I was happy. I was really pushing hard to get that in before the end of the year. And I think it's great because we'll actually be able to catch some data this winter. I think when they went out there, it had been pretty cold and things were locked up fairly well. And I think we had like 65 CSF or something at that point. So to your point there, that all that is being covered under the hydrosite investigation of that 450,000 roughly that we have left in that.
And then do we anticipate moving forward? I know we've finished the permitting with Forest Service for the gauge. Do you anticipate that we'll be able to keep running the data collection off of the grant?
Data collection is really cheap. There's a little data logger out there. And so the grant will expire at the end of June unless we get an extension. So the installation was covered.
Yeah.
But it essentially requires flying out there a couple times a year and downloading the data logger.
Perfect. Thank you.
So low cost.
Good.
And it's very low impact item. I mean, it's essentially looks like some angle iron stuck into a side of the rock in the middle of a stream up where you can only access with a helicopter. Very remote, no roads, no tree cutting required. So wasn't really impacted by the roadless rule. It was just pretty straightforward permitting.
Thank you, Trey.
Yeah. Trey, when I went through the budget, I noticed there's nothing in there looking at the submarine cable. Is your thinking to come back once you get harder numbers for an amendment to the budget if we need to be?
So we have it under feasibility right now. And the board approved 200,000, if memory serves me correctly.
That's what we have.
Yeah, so we got like 193 left. We spent a little bit. And so we don't know what the repairs are. And we're definitely going to come back to the board and have a very long conversation. And we'll have part of that conversation today. But we still have some critical information that we need to get before we can provide a solid recommendation to the board. I think we're getting closer all the time, but and Robert's going to go into this in detail here in a little while. But for the most part, you know, we need to know the depth of the cable that's currently failed. We don't know if we can pull it up, and until we know that depth, that will really be a driver for some decision making. And then obviously, and Robert's got some numbers put together for just some rough order of magnitude to give the board an idea where
where things are headed in, on that particular item. And then take that, sorry, Mr. Chair, just take that one step just a little bit further, you know, and then at that point, we'll need to decide how we want to fund that, right? Let's just say SEPA had to come up with $5 million on their share to do whatever outside of insurance. Well, you know, would you cover a part of that? Would you cover all that under the self-insured risk fund that's $8 million? And then over time, rebuild that back up? Would you take some out of R&R? You know, would you tap into the rate stabilization fund? There'll be some decisions there that we'll have to make. Or do you go out and bond it, right? So we're not quite ready to go down that trail yet, but those will be some of the decision matrix that we'll have to work through.
Yeah.
Chair, one last question.
Here. Yes.
Procedural question. We have a motion on the table here that if we approve this budget, the budget as I see it is predicated on an increase of 0.5 cent rate. Mm-hmm. And so if we approve it, even though we're asking later for approval of that rate increase, did we vote on it the way it is? Have we actually approved the rate increase?
Yeah. Would you like me to speak to that?
Right. Please.
So we take a separate vote on the actual rate. That'll come later. So you'd be approving the budget, and just to kind of give you a little bit of a sense on where we'll be, I think right now we're forecasting a surplus in the $600,000. Refresh my memory here, Kat. I don't think I've got that one sheet right here. I'm finding it. Yeah, so back on the suggested motion sheet, we were forecasting a surplus. If revenues come in exactly like we're expecting and we spend everything that we have budgeted, a surplus of about $608,000. And so if the board chose to approve the rate increase but implement it mid-year, then our surplus would be like $200,000. So it wouldn't fundamentally affect the budget much.
Thank you.
Good question. Thank you, Bob.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
To Bob's question, though, we're still approving a budget that is predicated on an increased rate. And if we decide to vote against that increase, then the only way to rectify the budget would be to make cuts, because you're not, if you're on a calendar year and you're going to lose $400,000 of your overage, you're still going to be $200,000 short on the entire year. So you would have to make cuts. So I guess I was happy that Bob raised that, but it seems a little bit backwards to me that we're building a budget on an increased rate. And then potentially, if we don't vote for the increase, we would have to go through and make cuts.
So, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So, just to restate, so hopefully it's clear. So right now, with the current predication, and I have to design the budget on some number. So that's more of a informational thing, I would say, that I'm designing the budget based on this number. We're trying to work within these parameters. The rate increase, if the board decided to do it and implement it mid-year, it would only, right now we're forecasting a surplus of $600,000. Essentially, that would drop the surplus to about $200,000. So it's still a surplus budget. So we wouldn't be approving negative spending, so to speak. And if you want, I guess you could defer that decision until after you make the decision on the rate too.
Chair?
Yeah, go right ahead.
So, yeah, we could, for sure. I guess what I want to do is work through the rest of the budget, because I'd like to see at what level we're refinancing our R&R count, because there's also that factor, too, because my guess is that, well, from I know, we're playing catch-up on the R&R, And so that's another factor. And then, of course, there's going to be a discussion at some point that it's not just a half a cent. We've also removed any chance of a rebate to the community. So there's, you know, it's doing this as we go along. So I'm open to going through and finishing looking at the budget, but I think Bob's point is in terms of point of order is a good point.
Thank you. Bob, did you have something?
And to continue that discussion just a bit, you said if we don't, if it goes into effect a half a year, let's say half a year into it, let's say it isn't going to affect the entire year, when what effect it has. In other words, you will have to find other means of funding your project.
So we would potentially be into deficit spending, if you wanted to characterize that way. That means that, you know, if at the end of the year we were forecasting, say, a $1.5 million in the revenue fund, well, if you subtracted 8 from 6, maybe you end up at, you maybe end up at $1.3 million. So your bank account's going to be a little lower at the end of the year. It's not going to, you know, you're not going to go in complete deficit spending, right? I mean, you still have revenue in the bank, right?
Thank you.
So, Mr. Chair, I think as we go through the second half of the portion of the budget, I think some of these answers will be delved into a little bit deeper as we get in. There's a fund balance chart at the very end of it, and it'll kind of give you a big snapshot on kind of how we think the end of the year is going to end up, and maybe that helps answer some questions too. And you know, frankly, when we present the budget, we don't know if you're going to approve everything we're putting out there, or you're going to add stuff in too. So it's kind of a little bit of a moving target until we finalize the budget. And with that respect, so with all that, we're going to move into kind of the second half. Go to page 28, and we'll talk about non-operating income and some of those particular items. This is a good sheet here. You know, we bring in some positive funds. I'll say the non-operating income's been pretty low because, I mean, interest rates are like nothing. It's really hard to make any money on the money you have. I did a thorough review with the board on this earlier this year, and we decided to keep our investments as they are. So you can see that at the top of your page, $155,000 on other income. Shows you your debt service. Total debt service for FY 2020 is about $1.5 million. Then you have our DNR contributions listed in there, and the for unfunded liability for PERS, $79,000. And then this is where we have the feasibility that I alluded to there earlier. If you go down to the third feasibility item of 193,025, that's the part that we're currently working on those funds for this preliminary work that we're doing on the subcable system. A few minor things there.
Bob has a question.
Robert has. Yeah, through the chair. So when we have an end of our obligations for the first payments, when are we done with that?
We got a little bit of blurb here. I'll let Kay dig it up here.
It's estimated through 2031 right now.
Estimated.
Unless they extend it.
And the amount does change from time to time as well. So, pretty significant.
So, do we have the lump sum amount? Is there a lump sum option?
Not that I'm aware of, because it changes every year, but it has the potential to change.
Each year, the state sets the rate that you're going to pay that year, and so that varies. The long-term estimate is about $960,000 is what we have left of obligation.
Thank you.
Okay, so total feasibilities just shy of 380,000. And so this part here, we've got contributions to the R&R listed in here, and it's part of the budget. But my recommendation from managing that and looking at cash flows and such is my recommendation would be that the board approve making that payment, and then I'll monitor conditions, and hopefully on a quarterly basis we can put 25% of that in as our revenues prove out. And if they don't prove out, then we won't make the payment. But we don't want to run our revenue fund down so low that we have cash flow issues throughout the year. So I think that's a conservative way to do it, but still stay up with the program and don't let it slip too far back, because it'll be hard to catch up. And then that brings you up with a non-operational net gain loss of $4,402,633.
Any questions there?
Yeah. Sorry. So that comes back to my question about where we were going to take those funds, the partial. And I can't remember what the total was for the repayment to the northern communities for the...
On the diesel reimbursement, or diesel payment, I should say.
Diesel payment.
Whether we're coming out of revenues or stabilization?
850-ish.
Yeah, and I think that was, at the time, I know part of my thought process was is that, you know, I know that's not, it's a small piece of that number, but that fund was put together from the communities, a portion of the community's reimbursement for the rate stabilization fund. And so, in essence, we didn't pull that money out of operations. We clawed back the $2 million seed money from the communities that was going to be paid out to them instead of out of operations. And in order to do some bridging, I do wonder about the possibility of pulling the money out of the rate stabilization fund. And part of my rationale on that is this. We're facing a half a cent increase, and then each community will be facing no longer receiving a rebate from SEPA. We've already talked about that. Those days are, you know, I mean, it gets up to the board ultimately, but it's looking thin. So if you take what you used to get on your rebate in order to aid operations or to offset costs, you add in the half a cent, you have to do your own calculation. But it ups the ante in terms of the overall cost to each community. And so as I'm going looking at that, I'm toying around and saying, okay, how can we work that number? And it may appear to be a robbing Peter to pay Paul, but initially that fund was not out of the operations. It did not come out of our general revenue in terms of it was going to be paid out anyways. So it's just something I'm throwing out now. And I know it's $800,000, it's a sizable chunk of money, but it's not $2,552,000 that we've underfunded the R&R account, but it would do something towards helping to offset that $2,552,000.
Comments?
Do you want me to continue?
Yes, if you would please.
Okay. So on page 29 gives you a good overview of all of our various funds, inventories. I think we've discussed many of those numbers already, so I'm inclined not to go through that each section there. Just gives you a little bit more detailed explanation. And then that concludes that part of the budget till we get to the R&Rs.
Any questions on that part of the budget?
No. If I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
In the very back of, I'll say in page 62,
If folks want to just go there, I just want to point out a couple of things that kind of dovetail into some of the conversations we have that we're currently having that has to do with funds and kind of what they look like and what we forecast them to be.